Welcome back to the Hemingway List. Excuse me. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we make our way through Hemingway's recommended book list. Today we are reading chapter 25 of Wuthering Heights, but first we will be discussing chapter 24. The questions that I asked were, again, Kathy, how can you possibly be attracted to that awful kid? I recycled the question from the previous chapter, chapter 23, because again, like, I'm just, Kathy is somehow attracted to Linton, even though he is clearly awful. The second question I asked were, finally, Nally told Edgar what Kathy is up to. Did he do enough in response, though? And thirdly, who was in the wrong during the incident where Harrington beat up Linton? Did Kathy incite it, as Linton suggested? Very cool. Okay, Techrific said, my thoughts on this chapter. Kathy is more or less the main narrator in this chapter, telling Nally, who in turn tells Lockwood. It's hard to understand the pull that Linton has on Kathy. There's nothing apparent to us, the readers, that would merit her paying attention to Linton, except perhaps part vanity or part guilty conscience, part boredom. Linton is self-centered, conceited, and ultimately an annoying character. He seems to have inherited the worst parts of both Isabella and Heathcliff. Nally actually steps up and comes clean to Edgar. Well, almost. She keeps some facts to herself. Edgar, I don't even know what to say about him anymore. Another character development I've seen in Harrington, who actually tries to apologise to Kathy for behaviour. His behaviour. Sorry, I butchered that sentence so badly. Another character development is seen in Harrington, who actually tries to apologise to Kathy for his behaviour. That guy is constantly being provoked and teased by Linton, Kathy, Heathcliff, and Joseph. It's no small wonder he's a little cranky. I'm beginning to understand Harrington, and I'm not unsympathetic to his plight. Yeah, I think I like Harrington maybe the best out of this book at the moment. I know he's a bit of a brute, as Kathy would tease him, but I just feel bad for the kid. I really do. JMama8779 said, it's an interesting thought about Harrington. I've found myself more curious about this character in the novel. In this chapter, he shows Kathy that he has been learning, but she quickly causes him to become ashamed of himself. No wonder he kicked Kathy and Linton out of the main room. If there's any character in this novel that I feel sympathy towards, it's him. Yeah, that was so awful. Like, he's trying to learn to read, which, by the way, at his age is a very difficult thing to do. It's very, very hard to learn to read in teenage years or early adult years. You kind of have to teach someone to read when they've still got that, like, sort of brain plasticity of a very small child. I mean, obviously it's not impossible, but the fact that he'd made some progress there was actually quite impressive. And Kathy just, yeah, shames him for it. She laughs at him and makes him feel silly, which is just the worst reaction to somebody trying to better themselves. Made me really, really dislike Kathy in that moment. Techrific said, me too, meaning he also feels sympathy towards Harrington. Lockwood seems too much like a stand-in for the reader and is reduced more or less to an observer role thus far. Maybe we'll get to see more of him with a little bit more agency later on. It's been too long ago since I first read the book, so I can't remember much beyond where we are at the moment, but Harrington is beginning to grow on me more and more. All About Alice said, it's an age-old idea, isn't it? If you tell a young woman she can't see her desired counterpart, she will put all her effort into finding a way to meet up with them. Yep, I think you're right. I also heard once, some bloke said this, I can't remember who, but said, It was like a rite of passage. I can't remember that was the words he used. This is a long time ago. I'm paraphrasing. But I always thought this was kind of funny and there was probably some truth to it, although what do I know? But he said it's kind of a rite of passage for teenage girls to disobey their fathers. Like at a certain age, it's like biologically inbuilt into them that they will disobey their father and just do the exact opposite of what they would like them to do. He obviously had teenage girls, so he was lamenting about that. But I always thought that's probably true, and I'm kind of glad I don't have a teenage daughter myself. All About Alice continued, I think naivety is part of it, as well as vanity. Linton tells her if it weren't for his struggles, he would be as kind and gentle as her. She has pity for him, but she also believes this comes from a sense of goodness, just as she believes Heathcliff when he tells her that Edgar is the one that is the bad guy. I think she'll figure it out too late, like her aunt. I think it's good that he won't outright deny her seeing Linton. It hasn't worked out so far. Oh, that's a good point. That was in response to, did Edgar do enough in response? So he hasn't completely banned them, forbid them from seeing each other. He's said they can still see each other, but he has to come to her. And I think you're probably right with that little bit of psychology there, where if he did outright forbid it, then that would probably only make her want to do it more. Maybe old Edgar does know a thing or two. And thirdly, in response to the question that I asked, who was in the wrong during the incident where Harrington beat up Linton? Did Kathy incite it, as Linton suggested? All About Alice said, I think everyone is in the wrong here. Nally is right to scold Kathy, though. She shouldn't have made fun of Harrington. He is trying to better himself. My favourite perspective in this situation is this, and All About Alice has linked to an XKCD URL thingy. What is it? The comic? And since he was scorned, I think he has the right to be angry. However, he shouldn't have tried to hurt Linton in the process. Nobody wins with this kind of anger and aggression. Well, you could say that, although his father, what's his name? Heathcliff certainly seems to have come out on top with his anger and aggression. Okay, here's the XKCD comic that has been linked. I'll try to, well, it's a comic, so there is a visual aspect to it, although they are just stick figures, so I think I can do this justice. First of all, it says, I try not to make fun of people for admitting they don't know things, because for each thing everyone knows by the time they are adults, every day there are on average 10,000 people in the US hearing about it for the first time. And then they've shown the math on how they work that out. Fraction who have heard of it at birth is 0%. The fraction who have heard of it by 30 is 100%. Well, what if you're over 30? Everyone knows by the time they're adults. I've missed this threshold. So if I do have to admit to not knowing something, being 33, that does in fact make me stupid. US birth rate is 4 million per year, which means the number of people hearing about it. Sorry, a bug just landed on my face as I was saying that. Get off me, bug. Bug off. The number of people hearing about it for the first time is 10,000 per day. Right, because 4 million times 30 divided by 300... No, I can't do the math. Divided by 30 years worth of days must equal 10,000 per day. Is that the math? I think, you know what, I think this XKCD comic may have gone a little bit liberal with the guesstimation here. First of all, what's this 30 years of... Why is it before 30? For each thing everyone knows by the time they're 30, every day there are on average 10,000 people in the US under the age of 30, I'm assuming, hearing about it for the first time. So up until that threshold, it's perfectly normal. Okay, cool. Now, first question, why are we just talking about the US here? I suppose it's an American website, but still, US birth rate. So there's 10,000 people in America. So if you're in America under 30 and you're admitting to not knowing something, you're one of the 10,000 for the day. Okay, then it says, if I make fun of people, I train them not to tell me when they have those moments and I miss out on the fun. Diet Coke and Mentos thing? What's that? Says the female stick figure. Oh man, come on, we're going to the grocery store. Why? Says the female stick figure. Because you're one of today's lucky 10,000. I don't really get this, to be honest. I mean, I get the sentiment that you should never pick on someone for not knowing something. There's that saying, there are no stupid people. There are no stupid questions, only stupid people. It means, I used to think that meant like, as long as you're not stupid, you won't ask a stupid question. Like when I was a kid, I thought that's what it meant. It turns out it doesn't mean that. It means something much, much kind of more poignant. It means that if you're asking a question, no matter how stupid it might feel, it's never stupid to ask a question. So the stupid person referred to in that phrase is the person not asking the question. There are no stupid question people. No, there are no stupid questions, only stupid people. Oh dear. If someone's making an effort to learn something, yeah, don't be a dick. I think it's that kind of goes without saying. It's very immature to do that. So Kathy is a child, essentially. That's why she's picking on poor Harriton. And then there's the mouse over text. You must not forget the mouse over text on an XKCD comic. If I hover my mouse over the image, it says, saying what kind of an idiot doesn't know about the Yellowstone supervolcano is so much more boring than telling someone about the Yellowstone supervolcano for the first time. Cool. Yeah, I kind of agree with that all about Alice, that if you make fun of someone for not knowing something, you're the dick in that situation. And as well, like, you had to learn that thing at some point, and I'm sure when you learnt it, well, hopefully, no one was there to pick on you for having to learn it. Techrific said, I love this. I wish we all could take this to heart and try not to kill curiosity in others and not try to put people down to boost our own egos, but instead endeavour to elevate ourselves and teach humility in the face of evidence and knowledge. Socrates had this right. Oh. Socrates had this right. Maybe it's time to emulate him again in the marketplace of ideas. I'm sorry. Oh god, that freaking bug landed on my cheek and I went to swat it and I whacked the microphone and into my own mouth. So all in 1 second I had a bug land on me and then I went to swat it and something intercepted my hand, which was unexpected, and then that thing whacked me in the mouth. Oh god, I'm dumb. I'm glad there's no camera. Wasm said, what Edgar should do is get out of his room, take Kathy with him and go on vacation or something. Harriton's situation sucks. He's been brought up with no guidance except whatever Joseph deems fit, and that's not very encouraging. And anger seems his default response, especially when he tries to learn something he's made fun of. You know, in this case, I condone his violence. I feel like he's acting my frustrations for me. You know, when you kind of want a character to just punch another character? Yeah. Go for it, Harriton. Swing away. I'm going to live vicariously through you because I can't reach through the pages and strangle Linton or Heath. Heather Dale. What's his name? Heathcliff. I'm somewhat tongue in cheek, but also a little bitly. Oh my God, brain. A little bitly sincere. when I say that I want what's his face? Hareton to do a little bit of violence. I'm fine with it. I can't believe I still can't get the names right in this book. I don't know what it is. I really never had a book. I usually don't struggle to remember the names and put the names to the character sort of thing, but in this book, I just cannot wrap my head around them. Anyway. Henry Loz said, "Poor Hareton. Heathcliff has created a mini-me in him. It seems that he is not ill-natured, however it might be too late to fix all the insecurities that Heathcliff has put in his mind. Cathy is not helping either, making fun of him every time she can. I have to agree with Nellie on this one, when she told Cathy that she should have praised his effort on learning to read. By the way, what sickness do you believe Linton has? It sounds like he has something that he feels that he will not recover from, and I believe Heathcliff knows it also and is taking advantage of this to use him as a means of getting ownership of Edgar's estate. All about Alice suggested vitamin D deficiency, maybe." I think it's something more severe than that. Whenever he exerts himself, he goes into a coughing fit, and one of his coughing fits ended with him barking up blood. So, I don't know, that sounds pretty severe. I don't know what that would be, though, some kind of lung thing. What affects your lungs? I think he might have been a bit undercooked. I was trying to think of the politically correct word to say, he was born prematurely and underdeveloped. And instead I said an extremely offensive version, so sorry for that. Undercooked. It's kind of funny though. sorry, I'm in a weird mood. Alright, let's move forward and read chapter 25 before I lose all my listeners. Alright, Wuthering Heights, chapter 25 goes like this. "These things happened last winter, sir," said Mrs. Dean, "hardly more than a year ago. Last winter I did not think at another 12 months, and I should be amusing a stranger to the family with relating them. Yet who knows how long you'll be a stranger? You're too young to rest, always contented, living by yourself, and I, some way, fancy no one could see Catherine Linton and not love her. You smile, but why do you look so lively and interested when I talk about her? And why have you asked me to hang her picture over your fireplace, and why?" "Stop, my good friend," I cried. "It may be very possible that I should love her, but would she love me? I doubt it too much to venture my tranquillity by running into temptation, and then my home is not here. I am off for the busy world, and to its arms I must return. Go on, was Catherine obedient to her father's commands?" "She was," continued the housekeeper. "Her affection for him was still the chief sentiment in her heart, and he spoke without anger. He spoke in the deep tenderness of one about to leave his treasure amid perils and foes, where his remembered words would be the only aid that he could bequeath to guide her. He said to me a few days afterwards, 'I wish my nephew would write, Alan, or call. Tell me, sincerely, what you think of him. Is he changed for the better, or is there a prospect of improvement as he grows a man?' 'He's very delicate, sir,' I replied, 'and scarcely likely to reach manhood. But this I can say, he does not resemble his father, and Miss Catherine had the misfortune to marry him. If Miss Catherine had the misfortune to marry him, he would not be beyond her control, unless she were extremely and foolishly indulgent. However, master, you'll have plenty of time to get acquainted with him and see whether he would suit her. It wants 4 years and more to his being of age.'" Edgar sighed, and walking to the window, looked out towards Gimmerton Kirk. It was a misty afternoon, but the February sun shone dimly, and we could just distinguish the two fir trees in the yard and the barely scattered gravestones. "I've prayed often," he half soliloquized, "for the approach of what is coming, and now I begin to shrink and fear it. I thought the memory of the hour I came down that glen a bridegroom would be less sweet than the anticipation that I was soon, in a few months or possibly weeks, to be carried up and laid in its lonely hollow. Alan, I've been very happy with my little Cathy. Through winter nights and summer days, she was a living hope at my side, but I've been as happy musing by myself among those stones, under that old church, lying through the long June evenings on the green mound of her mother's grave, and wishing, yearning for the time when I might lie beneath it. What can I do for Cathy? How must I quit her? I do not care one moment for Linton being Heathcliff's son, nor for his taking her from me. If he could console her for my loss, I'd not care that Heathcliff gained his ends and triumphed in robbing me of my last blessing. But should Linton be unworthy, only a feeble tool to his father, I cannot abandon her to him. And hard though it be to crush her buoyant spirit, I must persevere in making her sad while I live, and leaving her solitary when I die. Darling, I'd rather resign her to God, and lay her in the earth before me. Resign her to God as it is, sir, I answered, and if we should lose you, which may he forbid, under his providence, I'll stand her friend and counsellor to the last. Miss Catherine is a good girl. I don't fear that she will go wilfully wrong, and people who do their duty are always finally rewarded. Spring advanced, yet my master gathered no real strength, though he resumed his walks in the grounds with his daughter. To her inexperienced notions, this itself was a sign of convalescence, and then his cheek was often flushed, and his eyes were bright. She felt sure of his recovering. On her 17th birthday he did not visit the churchyard. It was raining, and I observed, "You'll surely not go out tonight, sir." He answered, "No, I'll defer it this year a little longer." He wrote again to Linton, expressing his great desire to see him, and had the invalid been presentable, I have no doubt his father would have permitted him to come. As it was, being instructed, he returned an answer, intimating that Mr. Heathcliff objected to his calling at the Grange, but his uncle's kind remembrance delighted him, and he hoped to meet him sometimes in his rambles, and personally to petition that his cousin and he might not remain so utterly divided. That part of his letter was simple, and probably his own. Heathcliff knew he could plead eloquently for Catherine's company, then. I do not ask, he said, that she may visit here, but I'm never to see her, because her father forbids me to go to her home, and you forbid me to come to mine. Do now and then ride with her towards the heights, and let us exchange a few words in your presence. We have done nothing to deserve this separation, and you are not angry with me. You have no reason to dislike me. You allow yourself. Dear uncle, send me a kind note tomorrow, and leave to join you anywhere you please, except at Thrushcross Grange. I believe an interview would convince you that my father's character is not mine. He affirms I am more your nephew than his son, and though I have faults which render me unworthy of Catherine, he has excused them, and for her sake you should also. You inquire after my health. It is better, but while I remain cut off from all hope, and doomed to solitude, or the society of those who never did and never will like me, how can I be cheerful and well? Edgar, though he felt for the boy, could not consent to grant his request, because he could not accompany Catherine. He said in summer perhaps they might meet. Meantime, he wished him to continue writing at intervals, and engaged to give him what advice and comfort he was able by letter, being well aware of his hard position in his family. Linton complied, and had he been unrestrained, would probably have spoiled all by filling his epistles with complaints and lamentations, but his father kept a sharp watch over him, and of course insisted on every line that my master sent being shown. So instead of penning his peculiar personal sufferings and distresses, the themes constantly uppermost in his thoughts, he harped on the cruel obligation of being held asunder from his friend and love, and gently intimated that Mr. Linton must allow an interview soon, or he should fear he was purposely deceiving him with empty promises. Kathy was a powerful ally at home, and between them they at length persuaded my master to acquiesce in their having a ride or walk together about once a week under my guardianship and on the moors nearest the Grange, for June found him still declining. Though he had set aside yearly a portion of his income for my young lady's fortune, he had a natural desire that she might retain, or at least return, in a short time to the household of her ancestors, and he considered her only prospect of doing that was by a union with his heir. He had no idea that the letter was failing almost as fast as himself, nor had anyone, I believe. No doctor visited the Heights, and no one saw Master Heathcliff to make report of his condition among us. I, for my part, began to fancy my forebodings were false, and that he must actually be rallying. When he mentioned riding and walking on the moors, and seemed so earnest in pursuing his object, I could not picture a father treating a dying child as tyrannically and wickedly as I afterwards learned Heathcliff had treated him, to compel this apparent eagerness, his efforts redoubling the more imminently his avaricious and unfeeling plans were threatened with defeat by death. All right, there we go. That was chapter 5. Another one down, hey? Have your say about chapter 25 over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I look forward to reading your thoughts on that one. And thanks for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.